Hey there, foreigners. This is Rohit from BreakingTheBorders.com, home of the ambitious immigrants. Today's guest is a serial entrepreneur. He started multiple million-dollar businesses. He is Ajay Prasad. He is the founder of digital marketing consulting company called GMR Web Team and a transcription services company called GMR Transcription. Ajay, welcome. Ajay, I want to first start off by asking, why transcription business?
So what happened, just so you know, transcription, we wanted to get the GMR transcription, you know, the word around and for the podcasters. So I think what happened after John Dumas, even though it was not published, he must have shared with some people. So we started getting call for transcription. Now, I created the transcription business, just so that you know, just to be a guinea pig for my marketing. So my background is corporate marketing. Just like you, I came here, but you know, I just did from Patna. I did a bachelor's in English and came here to do MBA. And after MBA, I worked in the corporation for almost, I would say 17, 18 years, close to 20 years in large corporations before I started my business. And part of the experience was a dot-com, you know, boom in 2000 when I was tapped by a VC-funded company to be the head of a corporation there in Silicon Valley. How did they find you? The people? Yes. Oh, yeah, I just knew some, a partner in a VC company.
Okay, you knew, okay, personally.
Yeah, and you know, marketing, now you find more people, but when I first started, the Indians somehow did not go into the field of marketing. You know, they would, generally they were engineers and all, but some will go in you'll be in finance once in a while, but there were not many people, so... And I just happened to know a couple of VCs in Silicon Valley, so they tapped me, and I actually quit a job, a damn good job, which by the way, my stock option later on would have been worth $8 million that I quit.
Which company was that you had to quit?
Navtech.
Navtech. Okay.
Yeah. So I quit Navtech to come and start join this company, but I mean, I don't regret it. I mean, of course, I didn't know. If I knew that this will fail and this will become like a super success, I wouldn't have moved. That's life. But I had all this experience. So when I started my business, I wanted to target small businesses for my consulting because, you know, the large companies, again, I've spent a lot of time with large corporations. So I was done with that. And then very quickly, I learned that the traditional marketing strategies for small businesses don't work and they don't have the resources. It doesn't even make sense. So I started to focus more on the digital aspect. Now, you're talking about 2004, where there were way too many small businesses who would argue with you, why do I need a website? I mean, I don't even need a website. So at that era, I started to offer, this digital... So would, you know, come up with a strategy and get their site done. I have a team in India now who would work. I mean, and these are on my payroll, so it's not like I'm outsourcing to an Indian company or anything. Now, in 2005, the web marketing, so I was just doing basic strategy and I was helping them integrate, think of it as a website, into their traditional marketing.
Whatever. Did you do that full time after you quit your job as a marketing director in navigation or Megaland GPS, right? You started your own company. Did you completely jump into your new company?
What happened that the honest answer is that I was fired from Magellan. We had a major, change in terms of, you can say the direction or the philosophy, and I was responsible for the most successful product ever in the Magellan history, which I created from scratch. Literally, I wrote down on paper what I wanted because navigation business I knew so well. So we created the first portable navigation system. Every portable nav system you see today is a copy of that, that Magellan one. So I created that, but then you know, there were some new people, and they were like, oh, you know, this, that. And bottom line was, I was asked to leave, you know, the week the product was launched, because they said, okay, I'm glad that you took us. We can take it from here. And I was, you know, this was a very small industry at that time, navigation. So there was another company that was based in New Zealand that they contacted me very quickly when they found out, because the word spread out literally within a week, and they asked me to come in as a president. Now, but what happened by then, what had happened is I was so soured on the corporate world. Not by what happened, because, you know, I fired people, you know, quite a few of them in my corporate life, and I'm sure that most of them would disagree and say that, you know, it was not their fault, it was my fault. So whoever is the boss, you know, that is their decision. So it was not like I was bitter about that. I was blown away was with the fact that I had no control. I'm like, wait a minute, you know, I can come up with the best darn product in this industry, guide them through everything from paper to production, and then still I really don't have any control over my career. So that was the revelation that I turned down. I mean, I just went on vacation after I was fired. I told my wife, let's go to Paris, actually. So we went to Paris, and while walking there, because I already had a job offer, by the time I was going there, and by the time I in Paris, actually walking, I decided that I don't want it. So I came back, and then I started, which I don't tell other people to do it. I only thing I knew that I wanted to do my own business, something of my own. I had no clue what to do. Mm-hmm. Now, being a marketing person, it was natural for me to start doing consulting. So as when I got some consulting, and I also have pretty decent network in, you know, because I've been in several industry, and I have a trail of really good friends. So I got a couple of projects quickly, the marketing projects in large companies.
What was your first project? What kind of project did you get at that time?
So the first project actually I got was with a company that makes hard drive in a very large company. I don't like to use the name because I don't know what did assign at that point in the, and what they were doing is they are in the market leader. They're based in Southern California, market leader in hard drive. But they had this external hard drive that you can use for backup. And it was, they were not doing well on there. So when you know, I have a very strong foundation in research. So I said, okay, let's do some research. Let's try to figure out who is using your, you know, from the customer. So we did some survey. It turned out that only people who were buying, first thing it was selling at, you know, the nerd place, like I say, like Micro Center and then Fry's and all those kind of stores. And the only people who were buying were the businesses who knew the value of backup. Now, my attitude was that for $100 product, every household should have it. So because, you know, everyone who has a computer at home, they have a lot of, you know, important stuff that they don't want to lose. So that's where I came up with gave them a whole strategy for how do we broaden the market, including the distribution channel and everything. It was a fairly large project, but then they didn't do anything because this is like again, market leader. And I just learned that what I did not like even was in the corporation. I was sitting in the back, right? You know, I was inside. So I will get the information from outside and I will execute it. Here, I was like outside looking in. So hand over this, here's the project, you are done. And, you know, here's my invoice. And I'm not, I don't like that. I like to stay involved. I like to see it to fruition, make it successful. And that's my personality. So I got another large, another project with a restaurant chain, which obviously I have a lot of experience in the restaurant industry. And I quickly learned that this is not. And then luckily, someone said, you know, I have a friend, would you like to, can you help him? He's a small business. He was doing like $2 million. And when I sat down and talked to him, I couldn't help him because, you know, he had no budget or anything. But what was refreshing to me was he had absolutely no agenda, other than how do I grow my business? So that's how I got into, we started in the marketing consulting, and then I focused on online aspect of it, like I told you, is because traditional marketing, they couldn't afford me, they couldn't afford even to do the campaign.
Yeah, so you found your friend's friend who had a small company, right? And you found that small businesses, you said you found your small businesses needed your help much more.
Correct.
And they would actually translate that help into something fruitful at the end of it. And what was your first step once you realized that?
So you know, my first step was that once I decided that it is going to be online. Now, I am not a programmer, right? I'm a marketing person, and I'm even I belong to the era when after MBA, you are totally spoiled. So from my very first job, I had a secretary. So I've never learned to type. Now I have to type it. So I use two fingers. So you know, of course, I've never coded in my life. But when I was at Magellan, there were like 100 engineers who were kind of directly or indirectly reporting to me who were working on this project. So the first thing I did is I said, okay, let me hire some people for the execution. I can do the strategy and the plan, but someone has to execute. Now, in the US, it was not viable. Again, for small businesses, remember, the cost at that time was so high, even for a website website designer is mind-boggling. And because everyone was target-focused on large companies and they had the budget, they would pay $10,000, $15,000 for a three-page website kind of thing. Small businesses, not only they, even if they could, it did not make sense for them to do it. So I built a team in India. So that's how I started. I hired like three team people in Hyderabad. My cousin has his own business. So I rented a place in his office and I hired two, three people. Then they started executing. And
did you already have a customer at that point?
Yes, because remember this, after this small business that I realized, then all I had to do is launch a traditional marketing and online marketing for
website business.
Website strategy.
Strategy, okay.
And the strategy piece was, you see, design, a lot of people were talking about. The strategy, no one was talking about. So I think the strategy piece always intrigued people. So when I had like two or three people interested, And I bought time by saying, in those days, it was not unusual to say 6 months for the website. So I asked for 6 months and then I quickly hired people in India by then and still got it done in 6 months. But that's how I started to build the business. Now, when we designed the website, we managed it for them. Mm-hmm. But that was stopped. We were not doing any marketing because, frankly, there was no marketing at that time. So in 2005, when the marketing started, the two things happened in 2005. I started to get a lot of people who had a web-based business idea, right? They liked the fact that I could do, strategy. And they had idea of web-based business and, as you know, the cost of web-based business.
Before you go into the details of that, can you give a quick overview of what you mean by the strategy?
Okay, so what happens is every business is unique, right? If you're not unique, then you will not survive. And actually, anyone who is doing even $1 million, if they sit down for me for one hour, all of a sudden they'll say, oh, geez, I didn't realize I'm so unique. A lot of people don't know, but there is a reason why you are successful at whatever level. So the goal of the first thing is that you need to bring that out. Right, the uniqueness. Mm-hmm. And then you have to come up with a plan around that uniqueness, right? So that means now who is your customer? Now, if you ask me, technically speaking, everyone is my customer, right? But then I told you that after Jamie's interview, 15 people called, and there's one person who is still in discussion. Rest of the people after, I gave him whatever they were wanting, but it was very clear that they were not my ideal customer. So how do you identify your ideal customers? What message works, right? And then when you go to the online, it's like, what are the key components of online conversion for you? So So you have to, every business, you have to sit down and first thing, pull the right information from the owner's mind, and, you know, because very few small business owner can give you those answers. So you have to kind of pull out of them and then create a whole program to say how I'm going to exploit your strength so that you can carve a niche and a bigger niche in your marketplace.
I see.
So that's the big piece about the strategy, right? And I would say digital marketing agency can do it at mm-hmm. that level.
So in 2005, you actually started doing more marketing and more strategy, more than just website design. What happened then?
I never did just website design.
I see. Okay.
You know, when someone said all I need is a website, I would say, you know, you go to Craigslist and you'll probably find a better person because you know, I had to also make money, but also that would be a waste of my talent. I mean, so I just wanted to make sure that I have the people who really understand that how they can use the online to help their business. So if someone said, I know what I have to do, just give me a website, then I'm like, you know, just go to Craigslist and mm-hmm. find one kind of thing. I used to tell them that post it on Craigslist, maybe you can get it for a few $100. Someone will do that.
Yeah.
So strategy was my unique value proposition from the get-go, right?
Mm-hmm.
When I started.
Mm-hmm.
And then a year later, when the first two trends happened, like I said, first was web marketing. So there were all these people who were talking about what they can do. So there was like slower people who said, I can get you on page one and all that thing. Nonsense started. And I was just observing. I don't jump onto the trend very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted to test and see is it real or not. And then the second thing that happened was I started getting a lot of people to come in and say, can you help me build a web-based business? Now, the issue and technically, of course, I knew how to. But then I said, if I am going to attract, and then the best part that happened, which actually didn't work out as well as I thought, is a lot of these people would come in and say, well, you know, maybe you can get some equity in my business and help me. So I started to think that maybe there's a niche here, something that I can do. So I needed a web-based business. So I had to prove that I know how to build a web-based business. And then I had to test all these marketing things. So I hired a couple of marketing people in India. And she was very confident that she can do it because that's what she was doing for other companies. And of course, she just knew SEO. But when I, in those days, there was no social media. So when I added the component of web presence, you know, there, you know, to the SEO and also the overall strategy piece. So that was very unique value proposition. But I was not willing to sell to my client on the hope that I can do something.
Mm-hmm.
So this was a great opportunity for me to create a company, see if I can I can really do something with it, right? In terms of marketing, and in the process, also create like a web-based business, and test all these things. So that is how GMR Transcription started, because I knew that there was a demand for it.
I see,
and I was. You know, it was a good timing because the technology was kind of converging to mm-hmm. make this available. So I created the GMR Transcription for that. And,
you also mentioned elsewhere that you had taped a 7-hour meeting during your marketing business. Do you want to quickly tell you what that is? Tell us what that is.
See, that's how I knew that there was a market for transcription. So mm-hmm. Like I told you in the beginning, right? I never learned how to type. I know I'm a horrible. My handwriting, even I cannot read. So
I am the same way too. So I can totally relate. Computers have spoiled all of us.
so what happened that I bought a recorder, a digital recorder, which was a very new thing in 2004, and And then when I went to meeting, I would, when I'm, I'll talk, I will just have, you know, turn on the recorder so that I can listen to it instead of, and I also cannot chew and walk and chew gum. So I couldn't be talking to him and listening and writing at the same time. And, you know, typically these will be 1 hour, 1.5 hours. So I'll come back, I'll listen to it, take note, and then based on that, do my work or strategy. This was 7 hours. So I'm like, geez, you know, 7 hours listening to it, taking note is 20 hours of work. So I'm like, okay, maybe I want to get this thing transcribed. So I started checking around. The only transcription that happened, most of it, I said 99% was medical. Mm-hmm. And so they had a model that worked for the medical world. They would say, I charge it by line and all those things. So I'm like, wait a minute, I don't know how many lines it's going to be. I have 7 hours, how much it will be? No one would tell me what it is because they're like, so I got quotation of 13,000, 7,000, 11,000 for 7 hours of transcription, something that now we do it for $1,000. So I'm like, so of course I didn't have so much money. So I said bye, and then I did it myself. But in the back of my mind, I knew that there will be a need for it. So when I had to start a business for test, so this was very easy. I literally spent $1,000 to start this business, this transcription business from India.
Where was that money spent?
That just create the website and the hosting and all that. That's it to start it. And then what I did not know, frankly, is there is so much of a demand for it. I thought that all marketing consultants would need it anyway. So I just put it on some marketing forum after the site was there. And, hey, you know, if you ever need to get transcription, you can go here and, you know, all the transparent pricing and everything. I didn't tell them it was my company. and then what happened that, you know, we had some marketing people came in, but to my surprise, like the professors and the writers and business, like we had like so many other people started to come. So a business that I was expecting to make $1,000 a month, mm-hmm. ultimately that was my goal when I started Amla, and I used to tell my wife, it's like, hey, you know, this will pay, make the car payment. I mean, what's wrong with that? And then I have a proof also that it works because this was my guinea pig anyway. Mm-hmm. This was not my real business. And then obviously it took off. In literally, I think in fourth year, it hit seven figures, mm-hmm. You know, that business. So now I have a small team of people. So in 2009, I separated it as a corporation. And now there's a team of three people who just manage that business.
I see. So even between 2006 to 2009, when you had the transcription business going on and you were managing it, it was mostly online and there were other people, right? So how much time commitment that you personally had to put in into the business?
You know, I never put a lot of time on the transcription business, mm-hmm. because I love the digital marketing part of it. So what I did is I threw bodies. So I didn't make money. So I would just get people to do it. So I hired someone in Indiana to do this, and which was all really stupid thing, and it slowed us down. But for the first
to do what quarters, exactly?
So you need a supervisor, right? You need someone to do the quality check. So I had someone in Indiana doing it.
Okay.
Then she also said I can do the copy, take the phone call. So we literally, when the phone rang, we'll say, and you said, you know, I have a question about transcription, then I'll forward that call to Indiana. And one time I started to listen to what she's saying, and she was like watching some TV, and she was so annoyed. She's like, no, we don't have transcriber. We don't have any time for it.
Oh, my God.
And the still that business was doing working. So in the beginning, I hired people and let them run. So we were not making any profit on it. But I think in 2009, finally, I started to take it seriously. So I created a process, looked at all these activities, like there were 7-8 people by then that were, working on it and started to automate things one by one. And by 2010, it was like running like a well-oiled machine. Without, now I'm involved. I spend few hours a week on that. Mostly, think of it as I'm treating it as a marketing customer. But of course, it has a much bigger value for me in terms of returns.
Yeah.
On investment, but in the day-to-day operation, I'm completely not involved. So much so that if I am the only one, I'm always the last one to leave in the office, right? And if I get a phone call about transcription, I just have to say, and they start asking technical questions. I said, actually, all the people have gone, are gone for the day. So can I have someone call you at 8 o'clock tomorrow morning? I mean, that's what it is. So. Yeah.
You said eventually it hit 7 figures, right? GMR transcription. What is the projected revenue for this year?
This year we had projected $1.4 million, and right now we are totally on track of surpassing that, because I know that we have already crossed 1.1 mm-hmm. by the end of September. So I'm sure that we will surpass. You know, my goal always is to grow a company 20% a year, kind of thing. So that is what we are doing. And you know, I always keep my fingers crossed, because transcription business is like a retail shop, right? People come in and they have a one-off work. And so you have to keep on getting found by people. And, you know, now we have, because we have so many customers, we get a lot of referral,
mm-hmm.
you know, the new customer. But again, it is still a retail kind of business. So I, you know, I'm lucky when I had 20%, I always had in the back of my mind have doubt and say, is this year going to be same as or better than last year or not? But this year has been, I'm, you know, knock on wood, things have really worked.
Oh, that's very inspiring. $1.4 million in revenue in this year for a few hours a week. So you tested different marketing strategies in the GMR transcription business itself. What was one strategy which worked really well for you?
So, you know, first thing, before I take a lot of credit, you know, and this is true for most of the businesses, you have to look at the timing also, right? So when I started this business, this was a very new concept mm-hmm. Of digital files, because in those days, almost all the, I would say still 80%+ of the recorders were like tape recorders, right? You know, with the tape and everything, or micro cassettes. So having a digital, something that you can upload straight from the internet, because again, in 2004, I think the majority of the homes still had phone connections, which wouldn't work in this thing because the data upload. So we were very new in this business. And what I did is, to test it, I started doing some Google, you know, paid advertising. And when someone was looking for transcription service, I think it was very intriguing that if you have a digital, and as a matter of fact, people used to call me and say, can you do microcassette? And I didn't know how to do that. So I would say, no. Now, today we can do that, because we said, send the microcassette and we can convert it. I didn't know those things then. Otherwise, the business could have been much bigger in the beginning. So that is where, that's how I knew that, you know, Google, there is a lot of searches for that. When it took off is next year when my marketing team, what in 2007, they, you know, you could have typed any keyword and we would be number one, you know, so end of 2007. So that's where we started getting a lot of customers, you know, so that really worked, and that's how the business took off. And since then, Google actually has screwed us up. I mean, you know, I don't know if by purpose or what, but what they're doing is, they are making it really impossible for any one company to be on top on the search, and then there's a local focus and everything. So now they are making it very difficult for you to have a business totally based on the placement. Mm-hmm. You know, so now you have to do Google AdWords and all those stuff in order to capture that. But it was not there, so that is what helped me. And then, you know, once you have a momentum going. Once we hit 5,000 customers, then, you know, you start to get, you know, referrals, the new cast people start to find you. And now that we have like 95, I will tell you that I think 2/3 of the new customers are referrals for us.
I see. So what is the marketing strategy that you have used that has not worked, that has been a disaster for you?
you know, so the, I will tell you, it is a major disaster. So, and that's what I tell people, please do not take customers just because you know, they come to you and you can make money. So because we were number one, so we started getting people who said, can you do medical transcription for us? So I'm like, we were not really set up for medical transcription here.
How is it different, medical transcription? It's,
you know, it's not different, you know, except you need to know a little bit of the terms, which is not a big deal. They have their own formatting and everything. But what has happened in medical transcription, because it's easy to do, you know, you have one person talking, right? So it's very hard to screw up there. So it has really gone to India and Philippines and all those places. So the medical transcription is very cheap. So I could not afford to get it done at the prices that they wanted, just, you know, with my transcribers, which are based in US. So, you know, I should have turned down, right, and said, no, that's not part of my competency. Like stupid, I asked people in India and I got this person who said, yes, we can do that. And so we just started advertise medical transcriptions. We started getting business. These guys were doing it. And so for a while, it was a very neat business for 2-3 years because we marked up 25%. And, you know, the job came. It was a regular job, right, that came, went to them. They transcribed. We charged them, you know, whatever, 8 cents. We paid India 6 cents. And everyone was happy. Then, but I could not control India. So one of the guys decided they screwed up on their computer. Don't ask me how, but they exposed the data to Google robots. So All of a sudden, a patient, American patient, you know how crazy they are about privacy there, type their name and they find their medical thing. That doctors come in. So that is where, and it turned out to be a major thing. You know, I stopped that business.
Is that when FTC was after you?
Yeah, that's the reason why FTC came after me. So someone complained to FTC. When FTC came to us, we told them, listen, okay, it was a mistake. You know, it was our vendor who left the port open. And actually, we contacted Google and everything was clean very quickly. But, you know, data was exposed for some time frame anyway. Now, I talked to FTC and, you know, FTC has only one agenda. You know, they want to show that, hey, you know, there's another company that I punished. And we hired an attorney. We spent like $50,000 telling, and I am admitting, it's like, okay, guys, this is what we did, but we closed that business. And FTC had nothing to do, you know, they were like digging. They're like, okay, you give me, you know, they were like, in those days, we had whatever, 6,000 client or maybe 5,000. They said, well, you are advertising 5,000 clients. I'm like, yeah, because the way we have it set up, when you go and register it, ads automatically. So if you right now you go and suppose it's 95-20, and if you register, then you go to the site, you'll see that it's 95-21 because as people, new people register,
it was automatically updating the number.
Yeah.
Its number.
Mm-hmm. So I told them, it's like, no, I had to do a data dump and send them all our customers who had registered to FTC. Then they found one error. You know, all the US transcribers, we always have them sign NDA and all those things. In the NDA, we did not ask for the transcriber to make sure that they have an antivirus device on their computer. So they're saying, well, you are still exposing your customer. Now, it was not even medical transcription, nothing to do with medical transcription, but they didn't care. And so now, it didn't matter in the sense that, of course, you know, it looks bad when you check on my company and you see FTC judgment, you know, against it. But if you read the detail, then you see that It's nothing. And then also, you know, they didn't fine me or anything, but I have to, you know, do an audit of safety audit every other year, and I have to send it to them and all those things.
Forever, so, or is it for a time period?
20 years.
20 years. Oh, wow. Yeah. That's a strict
ruling. And, you know, and this cost me $25,000 to get this audit done. So
every 2 years, that too.
Yeah.
So you spent a lot in attorney. It was quite a big impact. And you are, as you said, I did go through a lot of FTC rulings. And one of the things that I found through my research was that you guys collaborated a lot with the people, right? And shows for your willingness to be open.
Yeah, I mean, I told them that, listen, yes, you know, our vendor made a mistake. We contacted Google, and Google was, frankly, was luckily very active. And they just wiped everything clean in no time. Everything disappeared. So I'm telling them that, yes, there was a mistake, but look at, and then see, you know, my intention that I got out of that business because I realized that I cannot control it. You see, over here, it's my server, right? Everything is under my control. So I feel that, yes, you know, I can give my my clients that level of privacy. I just learned from one stupid mistake that with India, I cannot rely on mm-hmm. that. But mm-hmm. but I you know, it was just falling on deaf ear. And frankly speaking, I think I also made a mistake by hiring an attorney. For that $50,000, if I had flown to Washington, D.C. for two meetings with the FTC people, maybe they would have been more, they would be more relaxed.
I see.
Because it looks like when you just see the title, mm-hmm. the headline, it looks like it was such a major, you know, it's crime. It's like they go to jail or whatever.
Got it. Yeah, but we are, I'm glad you are well beyond that. And when you started, as you said earlier, you did not have any competition and the digital transcription was very new. But yeah. Now that is not the case anymore, right? There is yes. SpeechPad, there is Rev. I just typed online transcription on Google and I come up with like millions of results.
Today, if someone came in and said, I want to get into transcription business, I would say, what kind of funding you have? You know, Rev is a Silicon Valley company. I'm assuming by Indians, I mean, I don't know who the owners are, but they started with over $6 million in funding. Mm-hmm. And they do a lot of machine transcription and then people in India and Philippines and all those places that are the ones who are doing it. So
it's very hard to compete with them. And the reason why I brought it up was that you also talk, when you're teaching your marketing lessons, you also talk about having the edge and having the separation, right? So what is it right now for GMR transcription which separates you from Rev?
So if you go to GMR transcription, what you will notice that I'm talking about, US-based transcriber for accuracy. See, Rev can, you know, the big thing about your unique value proposition is you're claiming something that other people cannot easily claim, right? Mm-hmm. So you will see that we talk about all US based transcribers.
Yeah.
So that is our big thing. We know that some people may see the FTC information, so we hit on the security, that our security level is same as Amazon. Mm-hmm. You know, that highest level of security that you have. And then we talk about the turnaround time and everything and the guarantee, a bunch of the things that other people can do it now. Rev does not give those guarantees. So I'm assuming that they cannot guarantee it. You know, if they can, then I don't know why they're not doing it. So our big thing is the US-based transcriber. And we are saying that way you will get more accurate transcription. You know, so that these are the area where I spend. So I asked my team to say, to go in and look at all the top 10 people that comes when you type transcription in an online transcription company and look at what their promises. Make a list. Come to me and I want to see that there's something that I can speak. So I even had my assistant do some research and said, call top 10 company with your cell phone and from your cell phone and say, I'm looking for transcription. So what we found out that 9 out of 10, it went to some kind of voice message, right? And the one that did not, that someone picked up, it was such, the answer was so convoluted. So you can tell that they don't have a specifically, you know, designed, I would say, the customer service piece. So that's what we emphasize. Now, on our end, you call, we pick up the phone. So we always, so we know what people's experience is going to be, right? When they have tried that. So we just highlight the fact that, you know, highly rated customer service, you talk to the live receptionist, when you call during the business hours. So that's another point of differentiation that other people can't have. Because, you know, if you have a business based in India, how do you get a local, if I picked up, actually, I do pick up the phone on weekends when I'm working here and I'm alone. I love to do that mm-hmm. because, you know, it's quiet. And once in a while, the phone rings and I answer. they hear my accent, their first question is, where are you based? Because they're thinking, is this an India-based transcription company? And when I say, oh, no, we are based in Southern California, it's, you know, people start to feel more relaxed. Now, in normal hours, when you call, no one, you know, the you know, my frontest person picks up the phone, so you can't even tell what is, you know, that it's an Indian company or what. So those two points we totally stand out on. The customer service, mm-hmm. and, you know, because quality, of course we talk about the quality and all, but everyone can claim the quality, right? Quality is such a, one of those things that you say, high quality, and like, how do you verify that? But mm-hmm. when I say US-based transcriber, so now when you call the next guy and say, where are your transcribers based? Guess what? They cannot lie to you that they are based in US. Or when you try to call someone and no one picks up the phone, then you know that there's no customer service there.
Yeah. So if someone is trying to start their own online business, not necessarily a transcription business, but any online online business, what advice would you have for them?
So first thing I always tell people that when you are starting a business, whether it's online, offline, whatever, make sure that it matches two things. First, which is most important, is whatever you're doing that needs to match your skill set. Okay, so you have to be above average, because then later on you can become the like top 1%, no problem. But you have to be above average skill-wise. And secondly, you must like what you do. Because if you don't like, then it becomes work, and it is no matter whether it's a web-based business or it is a brick-and-mortar business, it's a lot of very hard work. So mm-hmm. unless you have a passion for it, you enjoy it, it won't work. So mm-hmm. once you have those two things, then I say that, say, suppose it's a product or if, even it's a service. So you define the product, you just do basic research. You can, you know, now with SurveyMonkey, you can go and ask some of the people that you know from your list, but don't do analysis paralysis. My thing is, suppose it's a product or it's a service, define what it is good enough. Right, that what you think is the what people will buy, and then I say go and just create a one page if you want, and go and test it. And by testing is very simple. $500 you test, you can do Google AdWords, and guess what? When people call, you pick up the phone, you find out what it is, and you say, okay, the product is not ready yet, but you know, I'll get back to you, get your information. Not so that you can sell it to them, but so that you know that your product has a need, right? And people are looking for it online or service, whatever. And after that you start, then you have to have the basic something that you can sell ready to do. And then your total focus at that point is the time really as soon as possible to start to define your, what I call the ideal customer, right? So you one of the mistakes that I made in the digital marketing agency, which haunted me for 3-4 years until I figured out what the heck is going on, is anyone who walked in, I will sign, right? Because they were paying me money, and then not everyone is the right customer for you. Mm-hmm. So knowing your ideal customer, and once you have defined your ideal customer, then you start to know where they are, right? What forum they are going to be in, what keywords they would be searching on, what social media they would be following, and then market and see if you can sell to the ideal customer. Because for me, I always tell people, until you have the first sales, it's a hobby. It's not a business. So when you have a sale, and once you have sold some of them, then you want to see how happy your customer is. Are they willing to refer someone to you? Are they coming back to you? And once you have all that, that's the time to now really sit down and come up with a strategy of how you're going to scale that business. Because then, you know, then you have to start thinking what processes. You know, it's one thing to take care of 10 customers. You know, how do you take care of 100? Thousands. Mm-hmm. So you have to start thinking about it at that point, when how to grow and all. So my first thing always is test it, test your idea very quickly that there's a demand for it. If there is, you decide that yes, there's a demand for it, create the basic product. Don't worry about making it a perfect product because, you know, your customer will tell you how to make it perfect once they start buying, and sell it. And once you have sold some things, well, that, you know, that's when you have to start thinking about you have a real business that you start to worry about different pieces of it.
Yeah. Thanks for those tips. And these tips and many more tips like this are in the book that you wrote, right? And you want to talk about that?
Yes. You know, this book I wrote actually for the many people who wanted to create like a web-based business. Now, it's no different than you have a brick and mortar location, and now you also want to add the web component so that you can increase your sales. So this book was written along that line. It's called Online Biz Money Tree. And the idea here is it tells you what to do what you should be looking into when you're building a website, in the marketing. So really, this will not make you expert in online marketing, but it will, if once you have read this book, you will be able to manage the vendors very well. I mean, I strongly suggest people that they should not try to become a web designer and, you know, or business owners to try to become a web designer and become a web marketing expert and all those things. A lot of people sell this, that do-it-yourself thing, but frankly speaking, I don't think it will ever work. You have to have, but you need to know the basics so that you can manage people very well.
Yeah.
So this book will help you do that.
Yeah. Then the book is Online Business Tree, and you have been generous enough to provide the book, online copy of the book for free for the listeners. And the book will be at breakingtheborders.com/Ajay along with all the show notes. Thank you, Ajay, for giving the book away for our
Thank
listeners.
You, Brett. It was good talking to you.
So, Ajay, if someone wants to reach out to you to say online, what is the best way to do that?
So you know, of course, they can go to my websites, gmrwebteam.com and gmrtranscription.com to see what I'm doing. And if they want to talk to me, they can call my office number, 714-731-9000, or feel free to send me an email. It's ajay@gmrwebteam.com. I just want to upfront tell people that I get good 300-400 emails. So, you know, there may be some delay in the response to my email, but I'm always happy. And I want to tell your listeners that if they need some suggestion, I'm not an attorney, so I don't charge them, and I'm happy to help. I love entrepreneurs.
Absolutely. Thanks, Ajay. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in. To get updates on latest episodes, make sure you subscribe with your email by going over to breakingtheborders.com. If you know anyone good as a guest, shoot me an email. I will reach out to the guest, get hold of them, and ask them all the questions that you have. My email is rohit@breakingtheborders.com. Thanks again, and have an amazing day.